Grid, I've got my friend Ben Kinney on with me today. What's up, Ben? How are you?
Oh, man, I'm excited to be here. Thanks for having me.
Hey, man, thanks for joining. I appreciate it. I want to start off with some basic questions, right? Not everybody within the Grid Network knows who Ben Kinney is, so I want to create a little context. When did you get started in real estate, Ben? How long ago?
I'm just cresting my 20-year mark. I've only had two jobs. I've been a cable guy, and I've been in real estate for 20 years. So it's what I live and breathe.
What got you into real estate in the first place?
Kind of a short, funny story is I was installing cable TV, and a lady named Paula's cable didn't work. So I went to her house to fix it, and she told me she just bought this place, and it was this duplex. But I said, hey, it's a nice condo. Congrats. She said, it's not a condo. It's a duplex. And I looked at her and said, well, why didn't you just buy a house? You know, I was barely over 20 years old, and my family never owned a house. Like, they rented a crappy single wide trailer, and my dad lived in a cabin without power. So owning real estate in general was something foreign to me and my family. So I said, why didn't you just buy a house? And she said, my neighbors next door cover 100% of my mortgage. And I did what my dog does when he's confused, and I kind of tilted my head sideways, and I thought to myself, I'm like, oh man, Rob, this lady lives for free. And that was like the greatest thing I had ever heard. Like, you could own real estate and live for free. Like, that was like mind blowing. So I set off to go make that free thing happen. And I found an agent and got a pre-approved for a loan and bought a duplex. And my mortgage was $1,210 a month. And my neighbors next door paid $1,200. So I almost hit my goal of living for free. I was $10 off, but it turns out it was three college girls. So like, for the 10 bucks, it was like the best 10 bucks I ever paid in my life, was to have some instant neighbor friends. And it was awesome. But the agent that helped me buy that property, her name's Catherine, still a friend with me today. She encouraged me to get into a career in real estate. And so, you know, one thing led to another, investing, which led to meeting somebody that got me convinced to get my real estate license. And that's where the journey started.
And Ben, I've watched that journey, and it's been an incredible journey. For those that are listening right now, Ben is the co-founder of Place, which is a technology and agent services platform to help businesses like ours operate more profitably, easier. And you got $1 billion valuation a couple of years ago on Place. So congratulations. That is a wild ride from just buying a duplex. You know, how long, what, 20 years ago? Is that when you bought the duplex?
Yeah. You know, growing up in a house without power and having an outhouse to having Goldman Sachs send a cable guy $100 million and a wire transfer. That was a weird day for sure.
Well, let's explore that. I'm very big in the psychology, like the psychology of being able to allow that to happen in your life was a massive leap compared to where you kind of what you saw early in your life. Help me understand that. Help us understand a little bit about how you created that belief system to allow that to happen.
Yeah, I think there's big thinkers in the world. I don't know what you think about this person, but I'm an Elon Musk fan. In fact, the new book that came out this year was really, really phenomenal. I think he'll go down in history as being one of the greatest entrepreneurs of all time. Maybe not greatest humans, maybe not the greatest dad or the greatest husband, but like, from running a business, he'll probably be one of the greatest entrepreneurs of all time. But he's a big thinker. Like, he's thinking about going to Mars, which blows my mind. I've never been one of those people, Rob. Like, I don't dream that far out. But if we put it in real estate perspective, when I bought one property, I knew that I could own two. When I owned two units, I knew that I could own four. When I owned four, I knew that I could own eight. When I sold 20 homes, I knew that I could sell 40. When I sold 40 homes, I knew I could sell 80. When I had a net worth of 100,000, I knew I could get to 200,000. When I was at 200,000, I needed to get to 400,000, like, and so on. So I've always in my mind known that I could double, because I never work at my full potential. I never work at my full capacity. Like, I'm leaving a lot on the table even today. So it's easy for me to imagine in the next year or 2 years that I could double where I'm at in whatever area of my life I would like to fix. And so that is really my mindset. So did I think my business or my world could be where it is today 5 years ago? Nope. Last year, I knew that I could get here by doubling. And I know that I can double what I'm doing today just by doing more systems and pulling in more processes and being more focused on the priorities and the things that matter. So I have a doubling mindset, if you wanted to put a phrase around it.
Well, you keep doubling, it gets to be a pretty massive number.
Yeah. What's the, right? the penny doubled every day for 30 days turned into some massive 10 or 12 or $20 million number. I don't know. It's a lot.
Yeah. Well, in order to do that, that sounds to me like it's a pretty massive leadership journey you have to go on simultaneous to whatever it is that you're building, right? Help me understand a little bit about your leadership philosophy.
I love that question. I don't think that there's a destination for leadership. I don't think that you become a great leader. I think that you strive to live every day being a little bit better leader than you were the day prior. But if I was to put leadership in like a progressional pyramid or triangle, that sort of thing, right? At the base, I would say it starts by leading yourself. Like, can you manage your own time? Can you manage your own energy? Can you manage your own mindset? Can you be committed to knowledge? Can you be committed to all these things? And if you start doing that, you automatically start attracting people to your world that want to work with you. So the next level of this leadership pyramid is lead others to succeed in the way that you succeeded. So like in real estate, for instance, I led myself. I got results. I met other people that wanted to get results. I helped them do it the way I did it. And then I ended up with a group of people that were very productive in real estate. So that's the second level. If you stop at the second level, you're going to wake up one day and all your people are going to start leaving. Not because they don't like you, not because they don't appreciate you, but because they signed up to be you. And they don't see working with you as a pathway to getting to be you. So the only way to like keep people in your world and to truly be a leader is to move up the triangle to the next one, which is grow leaders. So not only are you leading people, then you wake up and the people that you led, you're now growing great leaders. And then people start looking around and saying, well, I remember when Rob and Ben started working together and Ben was this little idiot and he started the same spot that I was. But now look at him, look where he's grown. And I haven't grown at that same pace. I should go get into the business with Rob. Because they start seeing that as an example of your organization is a place that grows successful leaders. Well, the very top of the pyramid is where everybody wants to live, but very few people actually get to experience because they get impatient. And that is attracting leaders. And you don't earn the right to attract great leaders until you've grown great leaders, until you've led people successfully, until you've learned to lead yourself. And it's progressional. Like the type of person that I could attract 10 years ago was an awesome human, but it's not the same level of results or track record that I'm able to attract today. Like I hired the CEO of Berkshire Hathaway that ran it from 20,000 to 56,000 agents. He's a phenomenal human. He's great. I hired the CFO that sold Napster to Best Buy, who ran Verifone, one of the largest payment companies in the world as a publicly traded company. I wouldn't have been able to hire them 5 years ago or 3 years ago. But over time, as you start building your world up, it opens up. You can bring in more people. And I think leaders get impatient and they want to go hire the number one draft pick, but they haven't earned the right because they haven't coached and created their own number one draft pick.
Makes a lot of sense. In order to attract those leaders, you also have to create a vessel large enough, big enough to attract those leaders. You and Chris developed Place. For those that don't know, go to place.com. You can see what Place is all about. And I'm curious because that to me was a trailblazing move. Nobody had really done it the way you guys are doing it. How did that come about? How did you guys, you know, think of this new model? Because I see it as a new model, or maybe you took it from an existing model outside of our industry, but I've never seen it done within our industry. So I'm just curious how Place came about.
I had my first state of the company meeting like 8 or 9 years ago. And by that point, my organization was probably only 50 people, including contractors. And I did this meeting with them and I put on the board, I'll see if I'll find the slide deck someday, but it said Project X. And Project X was this idea in my mind of what if I combined the different things that I was doing, real estate sales, real estate technology, real estate training and coaching, and consumer services. What if I combined all those into a single business with a brand new name? I didn't have a name, so I just called it Project X. What could that be? And my theory was the sum of its parts would be greater than the individual value of each item. Mm-hmm. And so quite a while ago, I started building a tech platform. Brivity is one of our tech platforms. We have 8 or 10 different brands underneath our tech world right now. And I started building consumer services and we started building this real estate partnership model where we partner with top real estate professionals around the US and Canada. And we woke up a couple of years ago and said, now's the time to combine them together to rebrand and put a new name on it. Chris and I kind of folded some of our businesses together and came up with this concept and decided for a new name. We paid $3 million for place.com, which was a crazy amount of money for a domain name. And we were like kind of sick to our stomachs, nervous about sending that wire over. But it mattered. Mm-hmm. It had to be a brand that Wall Street and the world could look up and say, this could be an Apple or an Amazon or something like that. And the Ben Kinney team or these other names that I had came up with wasn't something that people said, that's a $1 billion business or a $1 billion brand. Mm-hmm. Even though I had all the same ingredients, it wouldn't have got to where we're at today. So rebranding, recombining, reorganizing our world into one business called Place, what was a massive strategic decision for us that panned out when we finally decided to go raise capital and to get a formal valuation for our company. Goldman said that we're the largest real estate business prop tech company that nobody's ever heard of. And I mean, even if you go to place.com, you're going to go there and be confused at what we do. And that's mostly intentional because we have a very unique business model where we partner with people and help them run their business in exchange for a percentage of the profit. We basically are a business in the box, a full business partnership model. And nobody's done that before, at least not in the real estate space. I have friends in chiropractic and accounting and other businesses, even dentistry. Our friend Brian Grubenek's father-in-law has a dentist practice that he went and joined this organization that helps him run all the things of the business that he hated doing in exchange for part of the profit. And he gets to go be a great dentist, which he is. I think that there's a future in this business model in all industries.
You know, it's interesting is, do you follow Alex Hormozi
at all? Yeah, I saw him speak at an event last year.
So when you think about Alex's model, it's, you know, let me get you to $1 million in profit. And then by that time, maybe you've seen what I can do and I've built trust and I've built a relationship with over time, just giving you a lot of free stuff for an extended period of time. And once you get to $1 million in profit, I'd love the opportunity to be able to invest in your business, right? And so it's interesting because I've seen you do that where you gave to our community and continue to give to our community for a long time, right? Kind of Gary V's jab, jab, right hook. And it built such incredible trust with everybody in our world. And it just reminded me a lot of what Alex is just doing online through social media and through all the content that he's created. I know you and I grabbed breakfast and you kind of said that to me. You said, hey, I've kind of poured into the community for a long time. And I remember, and I've seen that, I've witnessed it. I'm just curious if that was a strategy that you set out to do early in the beginning. It's not just your heart, your natural state. Was that something you learned?
That's a good question. I think it's become a strategy for me today. I think it was maybe accidental in the beginning, but I've never been like a hard salesperson. Like I've always been let me tell you everything I can do to help. And if it makes sense, we should work together. And I did that when I was trying to get people to list their homes. I was doing that when I was trying to get people to sell me their properties. I did that when I was trying to hire people in my world. And some of those people said no, But over a year or 2 years or 3 years, they came back and they listed with me, or they sold me their home, or they sold me their business, or they started working with me. And I just started seeing the benefits of consistently planting seeds and nurturing mm-hmm. those seeds over time on these relationships, and how it can turn into things you never imagined before. Mm-hmm. And my competitive advantage, I think, in my world, is that I've been planting those seeds for 20 years and not trying to monetize every relationship, and doing what's right when you make a mistake, and giving refunds when something breaks, and not charging for certain things, and giving a ton of stuff away. And that's built some trust and rapport in our community, that now that I have something big enough to offer the right people, it's opened some pretty incredible doors for me.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. What got you into buying tech companies? Like, was Active Rain something you bought? Was it something you started? Like, I remember when I saw, you know, Ben Kinney buys Active Rain, I'm like, holy, right? I didn't know anything about your tech background at the time. So help me kind of understand that.
Yeah, I was on a plane like 12 years ago with this friend of mine who's still friends and a partner with me today named Troy. And Troy was... worked at a tech company early on, and he built one of the first big major real estate websites for the tech company he's working at. And he ended up becoming an appraiser and a commercial agent and a great investor and awesome dude. And him and I started talking about, hey, we should be in tech. Like, we should be doing something in tech. And we came up with this idea on this plane to start building something in technology. And we went out and put some money in, and we raised a little bit of money from friends and family. We started building our first, product, which was called Blosser, B-L-O-S-S-O-R. And Blosser, even Google Ventures said it was a Zillow killer when we built it. Like, the AI, the natural language search, the things that we had built into that platform was revolutionary 12 years ago. You could search for a home with a view of the Space Needle and the properties would come up. Like, there was lots of things that we did that other people had never thought of 12 years ago. Like, now that stuff is a little bit more common. So we invested about $1 million into that product, and I ended up having to fire my head engineer. And when I brought in the next engineer, he said, it's crap. Everything you built won't scale, and you got to start over. And challenges, we had borrowed some of that money from friends and family, like they had invested in it. I just felt like an idiot. Like, I did the wrong thing. I felt fiduciarily responsible to these people that I took their money, and this product was, you know, had a good chance of failing. So we started rebuilding it. But at the same time, we had a simple idea to build a simple tool to help manage our current real estate businesses. And we called it Brivity. And Brivity was a simple task management software that helped make sure that whenever somebody took a listing or got a pending, they would be able to do all the tasks in the right order. And then it would tell the customer that we did all those things. Very, very simple. Well, Brivity took off, and Blosser continued to require more and more money. Like, I needed millions or tens of millions of dollars to get Blosser to a point we could monetize, and Brivity was already selling at $40 a month and bringing some money in. So I pivoted. I just shut down Blosser, moved my devs from there over to Brivity, and we doubled down on building this end-to-end real estate platform, CRM, websites, tools, that kind of stuff. Well, along the journey, you have choices. You can build everything from scratch, which takes money and takes time. You can partner, which adds an inherent level of risk because everybody gets bought or traded or closed down. So you build dependencies on other products, or you can acquire businesses that come into your world and maybe 1 + 1 = 3. So, you know, our first acquisition was Active Rain. We bought that company from Zillow. I didn't even have enough money to close on it, by the way. I ended up having to pay payments for a while, and I just had to sell our way out of it, but we bought that. And we bought another company called Quickly from Zillow, K-W-K-L-Y. And we ended up buying a website company called Blue Roof, and the list just goes on. But we did it because strategically we needed that feature set or that functionality for Brivity to be a more well-rounded system to provide more value to our customers. Mm-hmm. So we did it out of necessity to build out a truly end-to-end platform so that everybody, so they could get everything they needed for their business all in one place, which was kind of where the word place came from eventually. So it wasn't like a strategic go acquire a bunch of tech companies that don't matter. It was a strategic, how do we add add things that will make the original thing worth more money. And I had done a bunch of acquisitions prior of real estate brokerages and other businesses. So I was familiar with it. And I have kind of a passion around doing deals and buying companies. And I think it's a good way to build a lot of wealth if you can buy the right type of companies for the right price.
Where did that come from, Ben? Was there a mentor that helped you buy your first company? What was the thought? Okay, I'm gonna buy my first company. Was it a market center that you purchased? Was it?
Yeah, it was a real estate brokerage, and it was in 2008, and I worked at a real estate brokerage that had a open financial world, so you could see how the office was doing. And they had only like a few thousand dollars in their checking account. So I had a choice. Did I leave and start my own brokerage? Did I join somebody else's brokerage, or did I fix the one I was in? But all my friends were at the one I was in. So I reached out to those owners and said, hey, either A, I'm going to leave and I'm 40 or 50% of your business right now, or we need to come up with a deal where I can be a partner and take over running this. And that's what I did. I had no money. So I paid it. I paid it over 3 years, and I made my payments due every August, because in real estate in my market, August is when I made the most amount of money. So I knew every single year I could save up. In August, I'd have a good month and I could make that payment. And that first payment was not a lot of money. It was today. It's a lot of money to me then. It was like $20,000 or $26,000 that I had to come up with. So I paid that $26,000, and then the next year, $26,000, the next year, $26,000. But by the third year, that business was making me $300,000 or $400,000 a year. So I paid it all with the profit of that business after the first payment. So Rob, I looked up and I said, man, if I could buy businesses on owner financing and turn them around quick enough, I could actually pay them with their own money going forward. All I'd have to do is come up with the first payment or strategically draw that out for enough time. And I just realized that was a really quick way to build wealth. And let's put it in perspective to my first property. My first property is awesome. I still own that duplex today. But when I got that duplex and I was charging $1,200 a month, I might have been able to bring it to $1,300. But I wasn't going to increase that rent to $5,000 a month. But a business, you can. You can take a business that's making $100,000 in a year, make that business make $500,000. You can't in general do that with real estate. There's a lot more upside in increasing business revenue than there is in increasing rental revenue. I'm a huge fan of real estate. I own a lot of it. So I kind of put that in as my stable and my, you know, my foundational net worth. But if you want to have a couple home runs in your life, I think those home runs are most likely to come by marrying a super rich girl, winning the lottery, or invested in the right business and having a home run in that.
I love that you took it back to that original duplex. When it comes to businesses, where do you find that most small business owners or businesses just you purchased seem to make a critical mistake? Like why do you feel like you have the ability to turn around a business?
Because businesses are simple. Every one of them need revenue. Every one of them need people. Every one of them need expense management. So when you go into a business, first thing you do is you fix their expenses, because you got to get rid of the stuff that's unneeded. Second is you evaluate the people that you have and replace the ones that are not, you know, in it for the long run, for the journey. And then third, you double down on revenue, because you can't expense cut your way out of a recession. You can't expense cut your way out of a bad business. At some point, you got to double down and increase the revenue. And it just turns out that businesses are really simple. If you can focus on those couple of things, you can run any business. They're all the same. Now, there's some businesses that might have a product component of it. Like you got to fix the product, or you got to improve the product, or you got to build the right product. So, you know, put that aside. That would add that if I was in a product world, but in a services world, like real estate brokerages or those types of things, it's really just driving revenue through, which is basically, recruiting agents or increasing the productivity of the people you have, getting your staff in order and managing expenses.
You know, one of the things I think you and I talked about a while ago was that a lot of people don't value their business, or they don't really see it, especially within our agenting world, right? Don't see it as a true business. They suck all the cash out of the business. They don't put a valuation to their business. They only look at their net worth based on maybe cash that they have or real estate assets that they own. They don't look at their agent as a business. And I remember you and I had that discussion, and I was like, oof, yeah, I wasn't adding that into my equation, right? Because I'd heard some people in the past say, well, you don't want to add that into your equation. And we're like, why? That's the greatest single place I've been putting all of my energy and time and sweat equity in that. And I'm curious why you think that's the case. Like, why so many people within our in our world don't necessarily see that small business as their part of their net worth?
A business that can't run without you is a job. Mm-hmm. And it has no value other than probably the salary you pay yourself. But a business that could run without you has a value. And there's easy valuations in the world already established. And most small businesses will trade between 2 and 4 times net income. I've always just said, if I have a business that could run without me 80 or 90% of the time, I would value that business at 3 times net income after I paid myself a salary, right? Or after I paid somebody to run it. But let's say you didn't pay somebody to run it. Let's say you had a business that made $150,000 a year in profit and you ran it. There's a way to value that. But what you would do first thing is you would say, what would I have to pay somebody to run this business if I wasn't here? And if you had to pay somebody $100,000 a year to run that business, you would take $100,000 out of the profit, which would leave you with only $50,000. So I would value that business at 3 times that or $150,000 because mm-hmm. somebody else would have to run it if you weren't. Mm-hmm. And just getting that mindset of moving to being a business owner really means that the business could operate without you in some capacity.
Yeah. I when talking to a lot of real estate investors who might run small fix and flip shops or wholesale shops or even real estate teams, smaller teams, it seems like that mental leap from being able to go from I do to we do to you do seems like a big hurdle for a lot of people. And I'm curious how you as a leader get somebody to push through that thinking, to let go of some of these things in order for them to build a bigger business. Like I see this mental wall that so many people around me hit. And I'm just curious how you lead people through that.
I think most of that comes because they've hired mediocre people in their world. So they don't imagine a world where they aren't needed all the time. And some people like psychologically do it, I think, on purpose because they want to still feel valued in their world. But if you can hire better people, those better people will say, actually, I got this. Mm-hmm. And then you're going to be standing around saying, well, what do I do with the rest of my time? Kind of Rob's handling everything. Like, I need to do something. And that's when you get to go spend more time with your honey bunny, your family, or you get to go start a new business, or you go get to spend your profits investing and doing something else. But if you don't get that type of person that creates that for you, it's not going to work well. You're always going to feel trapped in the I or we box instead of the they do it or my money does it.
Mm-hmm. Let's go back to your entrepreneurial journey a bit, because I know just through hearing some stories that you took a lot of the money that you were making in your real estate business or your real estate teams, and you plugged it into other businesses as you were growing. It's like you were in making these large investments, right? Walk me through that thinking, and then also walk me through any challenges that you faced in that process, because I'm sure this did not, you know, sequentially come easy, that there must have been some big obstacles along the way on that journey.
Yeah, I think I was willing to sacrifice now pleasures for future benefit. And I would bet this audience that if you compare my net worth to the quality of my kitchen, I have one of the worst kitchens compared to my net worth of anybody you could put in front of me. Meaning the front of my oven is not attached. It's it it's been that way since I moved in, and the tile is crappy and the cupboards aren't upgraded, and I just haven't done anything with it because I've always took my money and said, well, I should go buy that next investment or start that other business. Mm-hmm. I just haven't cared. But sometimes I walk into some of my friends' houses or see some of my friends' things, and I get kind of jealous. I'm like, God, they got pretty nice stuff. And over time, my mind is getting more and more towards like, you deserve some of that stuff. You should invest some of that. But for a long time, I didn't. I was willing to put not having the nice car or not doing certain things or not having the nice house second, because I wanted to make more investments or to do more things that gave me, honestly, a lot of joy too.
Mm-hmm.
And that was mm-hmm. probably a key difference.
Yeah. It's like Einstein who, can't find his freaking keys anywhere because there's just shit everywhere. Right.
Yeah.
It's just, you know, their mind, was building something else and that just didn't matter. Right. Yeah. I get that. You know, sometimes too, it's you're chasing something, you're chasing a feeling, like you're leaving, like, what are you chasing? What is it? What is it you're looking for at the end of all of this?
Somebody asked me one day, so, hey, I saw that all these other tech companies, Boomtown and Commissions Inc. and Follow Up Boss and like all these different companies, right? They're like, they've all sold. Why didn't you cash out? And I looked this guy in the eye that day and I said, well, nobody called me on the right day. Because there was an enormous amount of days that I would have said, F this, you can have it, right? Mm-hmm. But nobody called me on that right day. And on those other days, if somebody would have called me, I probably would have said, no, I'm not interested, because it wasn't enough money to take care of my people that are in my world. And now I have so many people in my world that I'm heavily driven by making sure that they have a huge win in their life so that I have a guilt-free way to go to my ranch in Montana, which I don't own yet, by the way, that I would like to own it someday and have a rocking chair and a cowboy hat and a four-wheeler and spend my life at. But in order for me to get there, I need to know that everybody that are still here that have been with me on this journey is taken care of in such a way that they're great and they're awesome. And that probably drives me more than anything. Financially, I'm fine for the rest of my life. But I want them to be as well. And they make me get up on the days that I would rather stay in bed and say, screw it.
Yeah. I love that. Okay. Let's pivot to real estate. I was shocked. We were at the Built Now conference and you talked a little bit about, how many assets, the valuation of the assets you have and the debt associated with it. I'm like, when does Ben get time to buy all of these assets in addition to buying, you know, and building Brivity and Place and all the rest? But more importantly, I was like, well, let's learn a little bit about his buy box. Like, what are you looking for? And how do you think about real estate as part of your overall wealth portfolio?
Yeah, I love real estate, and I'm buying real estate every month, if not every couple of weeks right now. And I buy some of the most random crap you could ever imagine, like homes in Birmingham, and we just bought a house in the middle of nowhere, Montana, for $30,000 or something. I mean, just cheap. But I also bought a $6 million multifamily place in Martin, Tennessee, or I bought a commercial building here and a commercial building there. Like I buy a lot of things, but my rules are very simple. I always want to buy under market value. I want instant equity because my goal is to build my net worth. So people don't realize that if they had $100,000 in cash and they went and bought a $400,000 property and they had to put $100,000 down, most likely their net worth went down and didn't go up because out of the 100,000, 20,000 went to fees and 80,000 went to down. So they have 80,000 in equity and their net worth actually just went down by 20,000. Mm-hmm. So I don't want to buy something where my equity, where my net worth stays at par at purchase. I want to buy something where my net worth is actually greater at closing. So I want instant equity. The second thing is I always want cash flow, and I want cash flow in such a way that I get my down payment back in 5 years.
Mm-hmm.
Because if I don't get my down payment back in 5 years, I can't buy another property. But my goal is to continue to buy more properties, so I have to get my down payment back. So I'm always balancing those two parts of the equation. Now, I want the tax benefits and the depreciation benefits, and I want appreciation. I want to buy properties that are going to be worth more in the future. But I really want to buy a truckload of real estate that somebody else pays off that generates a lot of cash flow for me, that on day one I have instant equity. And that's allowed me, let's see. I have $12 million in debt on $70 million in real estate today, give or take.
Yeah, that's over that 20-year period.
Yeah, and it's not because I put a lot of cash down on all that. It's I consistently bought and I let other people pay it off. And when I have extra cash, sometimes I pay them off. Or I buy I bought some property with cash, but I've been consistently building up, and I don't borrow from my net worth to buy other assets. Like, you don't see me going into my real estate and doing refinances to pull equity out to go buy more. I put pressure on my businesses to generate enough income to buy the real estate that I want to buy this year. I think people like kind of get into this habit of just borrowing equity to put into other properties, and they could wake up one day and the market could crush them. And I don't want to be like rich guy, poor guy. I don't want to go in this roller coaster of my life. I have a high desire for security, even over returns. I want to know that no matter what happens in the case of a zombie apocalypse, I'm fine. And that's created a less performing portfolio from like a, you know, cap rate perspective, but it's generated an enormous amount of net worth for me.
I heard you refer to it as it's like an insurance policy, right? If everything goes to hell in a handbasket with any businesses like that, nobody could ever take that portfolio away from you. It is just so solid, so stable, right? You can go to your ranch in Montana and get that rocking chair and get your hat and hang out and right.
I do the same thing with the stock market, by the way. So I put a lot of cash into the stock market, and I borrow against my cash in the stock market sometimes to do real estate deals, or I pull cash out to do real estate deals. But every extra dollar I have goes into my stock accounts, which I have lines of credit on, and I can borrow it at Fed rate plus one, basically. But I do some really cool investing strategies in there, and I built that up over time where it's a major piece of my net worth as well, because I'm consistently putting money in index funds and consistently putting excess cash in that stock account. And one of the reasons I did that, Rob, was I was sitting down with my lender, and she said, "Ben, you own a lot of real estate and you have a lot of net worth, but you're not very loanable. Like, you're hard for the bank to give a loan to." And I had hit a level of loans with that bank where at the next level, I had a new set of qualifications. And she said, "You need to have assets that are outside of real estate." And I said, "Like what?" She's like, "You need to have money in the stock market, and you need to have cash put aside. You need to have bonds. You need to have liquid assets. And if you build that up, we'll give you as much money as you want to buy as much real estate as you want." But you got to find some balance, because prior to that, all my net worth was in the value of my businesses, which you know, it's hard to be liquid, and the value of my real estate, which was also hard to be liquid. And they wanted me to be more financeable. So I started building a more well-rounded world of having cash, money in the stock market, real estate holdings, and the value of my businesses. And that became the bulk of my net worth.
Did you start moving over a percentage? Did you mentally assign a percentage of money that you were making in your businesses to the stock market?
Yeah, it was basically, let's say 25% every year should go into excess cash. 25% should go into the stock market. 25% should go into real estate. And 25% I should use to invest or buy other businesses or start new businesses. Now, I use that as kind of a, I call them my buckets, but there might be a year where I don't have any great real estate deals. Last year, I didn't have a ton of real estate deals as compared to the years prior. So I just put more money in the stock market. And if I find more deals, I'll go back to there and use that to catch up for last year's lack of real estate purchases. It balances itself out over time.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, you've got to keep track of it. You got to make sure that you're keeping track of it. Do you set a monthly appointment with yourself to go through your net worth statement to determine, okay, my 25. Is that a habit for you?
Yeah, I have an assistant who updates my wealth tracker, and mm-hmm. I have tabs. Like, I'm looking at my Ben Kinney property tracker sheet, and it has all my real estate. It has what entity it's held by, how many units, what percent do I own, the sales price, market value, date acquired, type, rental income, cap, what is Zillow, Redfin, how much my equity, loan value. I have all those things right in there. So I can see at any time where that's at. She does the same thing. I collect some classic cars. So she does the same things for that. I have a sheet we update to value our businesses. I do the same thing with my stocks and my cash accounts. But the way that I allocate money is everything over 4 months reserves in my rental accounts or my business accounts or my personal accounts gets scraped on a monthly basis and put into my stock account because it's safe. And I never want a business to be able to be sued or an employee to be able to steal from me and have my exposure be anything more than 4 months reserves. I don't allow money to build up in a way that puts me at risk.
Okay. That's something that we definitely need to do. We've got more than 4 months in many of the accounts, and we've been talking about doing it.
The moment you get a legal letter or a lawsuit, it's too late to move it.
Let's end a little bit on leverage. You said that your assistant helps with you organizing some of these things, right? You have hobbies, you collect classic cars. By the way, which is your favorite classic car, out of curiosity?
Probably Ford Mustangs is my
Ford Mustangs.
Yeah, like early '60s, early '70s, mid '60s, early '70s. They didn't come out until 64 and a half, but.
Okay. Did you ever buy a house, like a house that had a Ford Mustang come along with it?
No, but I wish I would have.
I one day I'll call you, Ben. I had one and it had a pretty badass like Ford Mustang in the garage from like 1965 or something. It was awesome.
One of my agents texted me yesterday that they have a listing where the husband had passed away and they're selling the house and there is a Mustang in the garage. So it's going to be the first time in my history. It's an agent at one of the brokerages, a friend of mine, and knows that I like Mustangs. So that's probably my first chance to take advantage of this deal and to buy one.
Well, to go back to the leverage question, one of my favorite books here recently that I read is Buy Back Your Time. And Dan Martell wrote the book, Buy Back Your Time. In there, he talks about the power of having a great executive assistant, a great assistant. What does your assistant do for you specifically?
Yeah, her name's Erin. I actually found her on Craigslist, literally. And she's been with me, I don't know, 13 years as of today. I mean, she's been in my life for a really long time, and she's incredible. Like, everything from personal stuff to making sure that I have dry cleaning and prescriptions picked up and gas in my car and gum in my car and cash. I always make sure I have $200 cash in my glove box of any vehicle I have. And so she does like lots of those life things for me, but she's been with me so long that she manages my rental properties herself. She deals with the renters. She makes things are collected. When I sell properties, she's usually the one that signs for it for me. She has power of attorney. Like, it's became, to the point where she manages so much of my life. Like, I'll fly her around to different properties that I own to make sure they're stocked or ready for events or things that we're doing. Like, her job is to give me my time back so that my time could be spent on things that increase my hourly rate or give me more memories and more joy. And she knows that there is no job description. She is the janitor and the CEO of my life. And that's what you're looking for. Somebody that says there's no job too small or no job too big. And, you know, these people embarrassingly know everything about you. She's listened to every voicemail, checked every email, seen every prescription, you know, been inside my house, dealt with my family. Like, she knows everything about me. It's a weird position to be in, but I trust her with all my heart. And it's been one of my best hires of my life.
That's amazing. She frees you up to focus on, like you said, create memories and do other things.
Things that matter.
Where are you focusing your time today? Let's end there. Where is Ben Kinney putting his time today?
I mean, it's obviously on my businesses, but if you were to break that down, My job as a leader right now is to lead generate for talent, which I'm on the phone interviewing, finding, sending LinkedIn messages. Like, I'm out trying to find our people in our world. I help our sales teams convert sales, people that are interested in our platforms or our things. If I need to get on the phone, I do it because it's important. I deal with the boring stuff, the legal, the financials, the investors, like all the bad stuff, the HR issues, things you don't really want to do. And the overall direction of the company. And if I could kind of bring it back to a guy that I heard speak, he was the CEO of the Ritz-Carlton. And he said, I have two jobs. One is to direct the company, its goals and its mission. And two, to make sure the towels are straight. Mm-hmm. And too many leaders think that their job is just that first one. They forget that a great leader is a frontline focused human that understands what their customers need, what their customers want, and what their frontline employees are experiencing. So I try to spend as much of my time as possible with the frontline, be it real estate agents or support reps or sales reps. All the middle managers, I don't spend almost any time with. That's not important to me. What's important to me is the people that talk to my customers or the people that touch my product. Live in the frontline and you will have an amazing business.
Where's Place in the next 2 to 3 years? What's your vision for Place? Just out of curiosity.
I think in 3 to 5 years, Place will be a very successful publicly traded company. I think that we're delivering on our first promise today, which is providing everything that top real estate professionals need to run their business all in one place. And now we're transitioning into the second part of our journey, which is providing everything the homeowner needs to live and own a home all in one place. And Place should be able to provide consumers through their local real estate professional that they know, love, and trust, the opportunity to get a mortgage or refinance or get their insurance or order repairs, like everything they need for their home. And then Place is committed to sharing in that revenue and that profit back with the agent that they partner with in these cities. Like, I want to help the best real estate professionals in the world be in all these ancillary services businesses in a way that their relationship with the consumer is protected in perpetuity.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. I love that. Congratulations. I saw Nick Waldner joined Place. I saw that announcement today.
Yeah, he's a phenomenal human out of Baltimore. Great husband and a great dad and great ethics and a hard worker and has a
and funny and great
$8 million a year business. Like, he's incredible and he's funny and goofy and annoyingly handsome.
Yeah. He is. He's great. I like Nick a lot. Well, Ben, thank you so much for joining us here on the Income Flip, and I appreciate it. And tell Chris I say hi.
Yeah, I will. Chris is a phenomenal partner. Chris Suarez, for those of you that know, he's my co-founder and just one of the greatest humans. I've surrounded myself with so many people that are great dads and great moms and great spouses and great humans. And it's really easy to show up to work when you're around great humans.
I hear that Chris is going to be in Tokyo next week running a marathon. I assume you're going to be there. Right, running the marathon alongside
him. I only run from bears. That's it. Other than that, I do not run.
I love it, man. Thanks so much, Ben.